everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy whatever day it is. Who knows? Days don't exist anymore. They're a construct. We've learned this.
Happy whatever day. Happy Dan is officially a South Carolina resident day. Happy.
It becomes less of a joke every week that we say it.
Yeah, happy locked in my home with a tiny terrorist day. Although at least, like I've said before, we thankfully have a decent daycare situation where the woman who watches my daughter has one kid, just has a couple kids, and they're home with her. They don't go anywhere. We don't go anywhere. So we just kind of have an understanding that if nobody goes anywhere other than dropping my daughter off for daycare, then we're good. At least allows me to get some work done.
That's definitely helpful. But,
yeah, very. But the weekends are a little challenging for obvious reasons. But yeah, Dan, obviously still nothing going on specifically for Syracuse, but a couple things going on, I guess, like in like Syracuse adjacent news in the last couple of days. Obviously, many of us in one way or another watched the 2003 national championship replay on CBS Sports. I know you got to pay attention a little bit in the background. I was paying attention a little bit in the background. We don't have to go too far into it since everybody's watched it. But the one thing I will say is, like, it always amazes me, like every single time I watch, just how impressive and athletic Hakeem Warrick's block is at the end of that game.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's very easy for us to, like, really jump out there and you know, build it up as this, like, huge moment. But, like, very few players, especially, like, in college basketball, are able to make that play. It's just, like, his length, his athleticism, his awareness as to, like, how to recover in the zone to that shot. Like, we've seen, obviously, guys dip the ball in the short corner like that and dead off shots like that so many times. And very few power forwards or forwards defending the wing in Syracuse history would have been able to get over and make that kind of play, and he's obviously one of them. So always a thrill, and I enjoyed the Syracuse Twitter pretty much, like, kind of it was almost like it was a live game with how many people were watching it, which was really cool. And then obviously you had, like, our feed. We had the really cool SU one where they got, like, way more people involved, including, like, Carmelo than I think any of us really would have expected. So cool to see the whole, like, SU community kind of come together around that.
Yeah, I mean, some games, I feel like, you know, the Christian Laettner game got, like, the entirety of, like, college sports Twitter involved. But then I think, you know, on and off, kind of depending on who the teams were, like, you saw more or less involvement from the college sports media looking for things to do during the week and on the weekend. This one, yeah, pretty well attended, obviously, by the Syracuse media and fan base overall. It was a lot of fun. Like you said, we had our live stream. It was great to see so many, you know, former players and coaches and media show up to the Syracuse University live stream that they did. But yeah, Hakeem's block, just absolutely insane. I mean, I remember watching it live. I've watched it numerous times since. But yeah, for him being a younger player at the time, still being able to have the, you know, wherewithal to not only, like, try to make the recovery, but make the full recovery, palm the ball, not make any contact with the shooter. Just is an absolutely incredible play still to this day. And I think it's amazing how quickly a lot of, you know, non-Syracuse fans kind of gloss over it when talking about, like, some of the biggest plays in NCAA tournament history.
Yeah, I almost wonder, like, if that play also overshadows how good a career he had, because, like, when he was being put in these, like, brackets that we had going everywhere the last couple weeks for, like, best college player, best whatever player, like, he was, what, a two-time All-American, plus had a signature NCAA tournament championship ceiling moment. Like, he's one of the best college players in the last, like, 20 years. Like, it, maybe not, you know, I'm not going to argue he's the best, but, right, like, he's definitely got to be somewhere on, like, the honorable mentions list.
Yeah, if you look at, like, stacking up careers, especially as, you know, one-and-dones become more prevalent, like, I think, too, it's tough to really, like, say, like, how to judge a player, you know? Like, do you judge a player by, like, does one fantastic season trump one fantastic career? Does like, you know, two All-American nods, you know, and a signature moment beat out, you know, it being a top five lottery pick? Like, I think I think everyone has their own measures, and that's how like you end up with, you know, somebody who had a really great career get glossed over, but really him, Jerry, like two guys who had really fantastic college careers. I feel like they do get, you know, passed up for guys who maybe had just like, and really, I guess it is kind of hard to find better college highlights than Hakeem Warrick, especially since he ended up going then, you know, in the first round of the NBA draft. But like, I do think that again, like the changing like measure of who's great and how does kind of get him caught up, even though I feel like he does check all the boxes.
I think it's also really hard to set for people to separate college careers from NBA. Like, I think if you really want to do the best possible version of like a best college player thing, as hard as it is, you just have to throw literally everything out after he stops playing in college. Like, I just don't think that's like it's right to like make that impact the argument. So like in the ESPN thing, like the Michael Jordan won the best college player bracket. Like, Jordan was a really, really good college player. Definitely not the best college player of all time. I mean, I think Jay Billis was pretty clear in like his saying like it should have been Kareem back when he, you know, went by Lou Alcindor at UCLA, but it's very difficult for people to like separate pro and college and everything that comes after.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, really the only reason why, you know, Derek Coleman was able to beat Michael Jordan in the ACC bracket was because of the pure, you know, petty willpower of Syracuse fans and almost nothing else.
Oh yeah. I mean, we went over that at length, like, and even then, like, I think you probably give Jordan the nod, but like that's pretty close, but your average basketball fan has no idea that that's a pretty close one if you're just talking college.
Right. So yeah, I think that, you know, as more of these random brackets that coming out and keep coming out, like there's still plenty of them. I know we're in the middle of a food bracket that was much maligned. We'll leave that on Twitter, I think. But everybody's using brackets as a way to get fans involved, get other people outside the normal community involved. We're doing that. We'll continue to do that. You're going to see kind of context go by the wayside for a lot of folks, just because it's hard, you know, especially like for teams, it's one thing. I think teams can stand on their own with players. If once you have a career after college, it becomes much harder to separate the two. And I think for Syracuse players, unfortunately, you see quite a bit of that. Carmelo kind of being an exception. And then, you know, for those who want to deride Syracuse players after the fact, kind of look at, you know, guys like Johnny Flynn, who had understandable injuries, Wes Johnson, who never really materialized into the lottery pick that he was supposed to be. Dion Waiters, who's obviously had his own trials and tribulations. There's plenty of other guys who just haven't really materialized for one reason or another. But I think Hakeem Warrick, like you said, falls victim to the, like, he had a pretty long career actually, but it just never turned into, you know, a first round pick career, I guess. So a debate for another day, a debate that I'm sure is going to come back up when the draft rolls around in a couple months.
Yeah, I think that's another part of it. It's like, it's not even like he had a failed NBA career. He played in the NBA for like almost a decade, if not a decade. So I think most people would take that. And that's like where you get, you know, obviously, although he wasn't as high a pick, but like him, Wes, like Wes, I think is was he still in the NBA this year? So like,
I think a year ago.
He might have just missed his past season. But like, you know, it's hard to really get on guys whether or not they live up to like the standard before they were drafted when they play for 10 years. Like, a lot of guys don't play nearly that long. So, it's just you try not to, you know, let that impact when you're deciding these very important brackets that we do, especially this year when there wasn't much else to talk about. But, it's a fun exercise anyway. No matter what they are, like, I hope people aren't going to be worked up about them. Taking a glance at the Twitter fallout today.
Yeah, it was definitely a fun one. Again, I'll leave that fight to Andy. For putting out a food bracket that has not won too many fans over, especially in the local Syracuse media. But in any case, we go from one hypothetical to another. Kevin had a really good piece up today about building your ultimate Syracuse men's basketball lineup. Plenty of people have like this whole, like, you know, I forgot, what is it? Like, how many dollars? Like $15, build your ultimate lineup.
In general.
Yeah, like a pretty well tread idea, and Kevin kind of put a new spin on it of just $44 to build your own Syracuse men's basketball team. Obviously, some really great players on here. He also had the added wrinkle of you could add any other player for $2. I actually think that was a little low. I probably would have gone with like $7. So, you know, you had the different categories of player. You had $20 for the top tier, $15 for the next, then $10, $5, and $4. And then again, any player for $2. We were just praising Hakeem Warrick. Warrick was not put on here. So Warrick could be one of the $2 players. Again, I would have probably had it at $7. I know in the comments, I weighed in on mine. I think I went Arinze Onuwaku, Johnny Flynn, Wes Johnson, Jerry, and CJ Fair, I think, was the other player I picked. Yeah, and CJ Fair was the other player I picked at the three. Dan, who would you go with, given the kind of new wrinkle that Kevin added here?
I actually totally like didn't realize Hack wasn't even on here when I was going through it, which is like, I think you almost have to put him on for $2. It's not like it's very difficult not to. So I'm actually reorganizing mine a little bit as we speak, taking that into account. One second. I'm taking this like entirely too seriously. I had Dion, but I think that gives me, yeah. All right, so I'm going to change it. So I went Tyler Ennis at point guard for $4. Just, I think he's so balanced. They get a lot of good play out of him. Probably not, you know, as offensively explosive as Johnny Flynn, who's a dollar more, but I think better defensively. And then with this, I had Dion, but I switched over to Jerry just to give us a little more offensive shooting firepower, which gets us up to $19. And then I think you just kind of have to take Carmelo, which sends you up to $39. Just, you know, if you're not taking 20, I think Melo's like tough to avoid. And then you put in Warrick for 2 months at power forward, and you put in Ivra Routine Christmas as my $2 center. Taking the senior year rack, I think he's probably like one of the best all around options, bang for your buck. So, kind of stacked it with Jerry and Melo, and then surrounded him with some other good options. I think it kind of teaches you, like, once you get off of that, like, really high tier of guys who are like in the $15-$20 range, like, we've had so many really good players that come through, it's really hard to make one of these charts and not have like someone just too low.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think there's like, obviously, if you make it like infinity amount of years too, like you do start to get into this conversation of like, you know, who goes where and how, like that I probably would have put Warrick in here somewhere if we were able to swing it. I think too, just the added wrinkle does add some weirdness. Like I think you could easily, I think a lot of people were trying to, you know, take a different tact in the comments in this one too. And instead of like making the best, I mean, they were trying to get the best team, but I think a lot of them too were seeing how cheap they could make the best team, which is not usually how these things go. So I was entertained by it. I think that, you know, exercises like this are going to become pretty prevalent this offseason. I thought this was, again, another fun one that I'm glad Kevin did, because I think, you know, there's kind of an endless amount of permutations here, depending on what type of team you want. I know with my team, I went with a team that could really run. Johnny Flynn really was the only player in there that couldn't defend all that well. And if you wanted to, you know, sub in an Ennis or Jason Hart, you could have done that, I think, and still fit within the budget on mine at least.
Yeah, I think this also is like very telling in terms of like when you really go for non-Syracuse basketball, you're going to naturally shade your picks to that, because like obviously I know Billy Owens is really good. I've seen highlights. I've seen like a couple of full games, but I didn't get to see like, you know, 90 or 100 games of Billy Owens. I saw every single game that obviously Tyler Ennis played and a lot of the other guys on here, Dion, CJ. So it's hard not to shade it towards like when your Syracuse fandom was most prevalent.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I think the guys I named, everybody except Jerry was the only player that I didn't see play when I was at school, but Jerry graduated the year before I got there. Well, I guess the year I got there, but the season before my first season on campus. So yeah, I think there was definitely some trending to that one, but still fun. Definitely a good exercise. You know what? Why don't we do a little bit of early halftime here and talk a little bit about beer before we jump into the rest of today's topic, Dan?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Cool. Yeah, I've still been sticking with the local stuff. I finished off the six-pack of the Steel Hands Tropical IPA, and then another six-pack, and that was also finished by me and the other people I'm staying with. And then I also had a couple of the Westport Dozes, which I'm now working on. So not a lot of variety, because I haven't been like stacking up on a ton of beer every time I go, but I'm trying to grab at least like a new six-pack every time I get over to Publix once a week or so, trying not to be out in public too much, but, you know, I think we've been doing about weekly grocery runs, and that's worked out. So hopefully to keep on expanding there as long as I'm down here, which who knows at this point.
Fair. Yeah, I've been doing weekly. I just go on, like, Sunday morning before things get too crazy for groceries. But for beer, I've been doing local delivery from breweries to, you know, help do my part, at least, in limit how much I'm out. From Highland Park, we got some Crossbow Pills. That was really, really good. Almost as good as Timbo Pills, a beer I've raved about from them. And then finished up my last crowler of a Quarantine Machine from Smog City. Have some more stuff from Highland Park actually getting delivered tomorrow. So I'll have more to share there. Again, not too much variety, but nonetheless, drinking some good local stuff. And I still haven't run through my my stockpile of mango Bud Light seltzer yet, so I'm sure we'll get to that.
The staple, obviously.
the new favorite beer. Again, it's not as bad as you think it might be.
Yeah, I'm looking and it doesn't look like any of the breweries are delivering down here, but they're all doing like to-go stuff, so maybe I'll see if I can grab a car and do a little bit of a hit up some of the breweries and grab some cans. We'll see.
Very nice. So some other like news, I guess. Caesars Sportsbook released their over-under win totals for every team in college football. The one that we care about most, at least for this show's purposes, are the ACCs. Syracuse over-under was set at 5.5, which was kind of where everybody settled in initially last year. One idiot that writes for a certain blog said that that was a joke and that you should definitely bet the over. He did not, however. So you can guess who that idiot might be. But in any case, now you get to have a much different quandary with this 5.5 win over under. Dan, are you as anxious to bet the over this time around?
I will say I'm less anxious to bet the over this time, but I remain pretty optimistic. I think this number is pretty on where you would assume a number like this should be for Syracuse. But I'm less like super bullish on it, like super confident that we'll hit the over, although I still think so. Yeah, I have to go through the schedule and see where I think we wind up. It is nice that our floor has seemed to have raised. It's like there was it wasn't that long ago where every year when these came out, it was like 3 or 4.5.
Yeah, I think too, it helps that like SU just smartly scheduled in a manageable fashion for the non-conference schedule this year. Having like even with a road game in there, like, well, two road games, I believe. Yeah, it's two road games. Like having Western Michigan and Liberty and Colgate and Rutgers, like it's still pretty manageable, even if this team is worse than last year's. And some of the advanced metrics might indicate this team's going to be worse than last year's group. I don't think they will be, if only because I don't think the offensive line is going to be as bad. And I think that's going to help alleviate a lot of the problems on the offensive side of the ball, as well as some of the coaching changes. In any case, we'll get into a lot of that stuff as the off season wears on and we get into like the real off season, assuming there's going to be a season come the fall. But looking down the Atlantic Division first, just giving everybody the over unders for each. Clemson 11.5, Florida State 7.5, Louisville 7.5, Wake Forest 7, Syracuse 5.5, Boston College 5, NC State 4.5. I think that that's fair tier wise. I think Wake Forest is being given a little too much of the benefit of the doubt at this point. I know like we don't throw as much shade at the Deacs as we do at NC State and Pitt on this program, but at the same time, I do feel like Wake Forest under Clawson has gotten like to a level of like mental dependability, and they are a good team, but they've gotten to a level of dependability among media, that like seven, I mean, obviously like Caesar Sportsbook isn't media, but it feels like everyone's kind of like just bought into Wake Forest now as a permanent like 6-7 win team at minimum. I think they could take a significant step back this year. I think that still might net them 6 wins, but that 7 is an intriguing one for me. On the coastal side, Miami is first with 9, North Carolina at 8.5, Virginia Tech 8, Virginia 6.5, Pitt 6.5, Duke 5.5, Georgia Tech 3. I think Georgia Tech, that might be low. Everybody else seems pretty accurate. I think North Carolina might be trending a little high. And I wouldn't be shocked if that line drifts back down a little bit more towards like 7.5 or 8, depending on the action. But and anything else kind of stand out here?
No, I was with you on Wake Forest. I think they're the ones that jumped out pretty early as there's a very good chance they fall down to 5 or 6 wins this year, and 7 just seems a little bit high. I think if it was 5.5 or 6, I think I'd be a little more cautious about that, but I'd be interested in betting that if I was in a state that had legal betting, as I normally am frequently, but not at this moment in time. And then in the coastal, I'm afraid. I think the Miami height, like Miami at 9, is pretty high, honestly. They just haven't proven it consistently enough. UNC, I'd probably just avoid. I agree with you that I think they're kind of like they're the team getting a lot of hype this year, and like I think they could look at like a 7-win year that would usually be fine for where they are and seem disappointing. And then Georgia Tech, I think they're going to win more than 3. Like they showed some like really solid first year in a massive rebuild performance. Like they were better last year than they should have been, even if the wins didn't reflect it. So I would go over on them as well, as you said.
Yeah, I mean, Collins is a really good coach. The one benefit, one big thing I saw in here was the fact that, you know, 3 teams on SU's schedule, and 2 of them are at home, have fewer projected wins than us. BC at 5, NC State at 4.5, Georgia Tech at 3. We're facing the Wolfpack and the Yellow Jackets at the Dome, or whatever the hell we're calling it. I'm assuming it's still going to be the Dome, at least for now, this year.
It's been the Dome.
the Wegmans edifice sponsored by KeyBank. But yeah, I have, I know when I went through the exercise, like earlier in the season, I said 6.33 wins. If you're looking at win probabilities, I'm still going to trend towards there. Honestly, like if we were facing almost anybody else in the first 2 games, I'd be very, very concerned about Syracuse's bowl prospects. The only thing that gives me some sort of peace of mind here is the fact that Rutgers and BC, our first 2 opponents in the opposite order, are replacing their entire staffs. And I think that there's enough like there's enough hitting reset there and enough of a question about, you know, returning talent that I think we can win both of them. But I'm not like, I'm definitely not overly confident. And I'm also far less confident in that fact than I was even like a month ago.
Yeah, I think that's... I now just did the correctly unmuted myself, thought I had done the mute myself when I thought I was unmuting myself, and then re-unmuted myself. We're firing in all cylinders here. Yeah, I'm really glad. I'm not totally convinced that like Reggiano is going to be like the great savior of Rutgers a second time, but I do expect them to eventually be more like a lot more competitive than they have been since he left the first time. I'm glad we're getting them early. I'm not already BC early, as you said. I think this schedule, as you alluded to earlier, like it might set up a much more successful year win wise, even if like we don't take a huge step forward on the field. And if we do take a big step forward on the field, like, you know, maybe we'll have another really nice season But we might, like, this is one of those schedules kind of designed to, like, get you over the hump to bowl eligibility if you're at all in the bowl eligible type team range. So hopefully we don't have a stumble against, like, a Western Michigan or a Liberty, because, like, we should, I think, on paper, win our four non-conferences and pick up that BC win early. And that sets you up for a really solid, like, just figure out a way to get to six. And you know, what we saw a couple years ago, like, you get to six and then you just off to the races, hopefully. The ACC, you know, shouldn't be, I think it'll be better than it was last year, but it shouldn't be, like, monumentally better. So I'm optimistic, but after last season, cautiously so.
Yeah, I mean, you know what, if Dino had brought back everybody on the coaching staff, if we weren't, like, I think replacing some pieces with, I think, really good talent, I would definitely be a lot less positive. I think the fact that NC State's got a hit reset still, I think, like, NC State's kind of in, like, a 2-year, like, regression back to, like, where you and I and some others had them for years when they were figuring out how to win 6 or 7 games. I think BC is doing the same, and they're in year one of that potential regression. I think Pitt, you know, I think Pitt's still Pitt, but I just don't believe in Narduzzi, and I'm probably never going to. And then, yeah, Georgia Tech, like, I think they're better than 3 wins, but I don't think they're a bowl team. Right there, like, if you can eke out, you know, 2 of the 4 teams I just mentioned, you're potentially bowling as long as you win 4-0. The non-conference, SU's also managed to upset a team every year. So, like, there's a potential for that. You know, Wake Forest would count as an upset again if that happened again. There's Louisville, you know, coming back to the dome, Florida State, coming back to the dome. I don't think we're going to be on the same field or even the same galaxy as Clemson this year, but, you know, we're headed down there later this season. Like, there's a path, and it's not that dire, but at the same time, like, when, like, a lot of people probably read over, you know, what Bill Connolly put up, his like days dedicated to teams are now more like a tweet thread of some certain things to watch. And, like, the advanced numbers absolutely hate us this year, and they're probably going to for a while until the current players are able to show some production, and not just production, but efficiency, which is something that's really eluded them, and even eluded them in 2018 when we were obviously a pretty decent team.
Yeah, I think until we, like, prove that we'll, you know, if you're winning games, I think you can, like, look at those numbers, and we do a lot to kind of tell, like, a deeper story. But, like, I think I'm not super worried about it until we get to the season. So we'll see what happens with Bill Sees. But there are very justifiable reasons why, based on his model, we don't project out well this year, and why we haven't projected out well for, like, a couple of years where we were pretty decent. So it's not worth getting super worked up about, I don't think, at this point especially. But yeah, and even Florida State, like we didn't mention, they have a new coach with Mike Norvell, who I think will do a good job, but he's not going to just, like, plug in what they were already doing with Taggart. So there might even be opportunity there for an upset if they have a bit of a rocky transition. And if they do, like, it's kind of unfair, but Norvell, I think, kind of needs to get off to a fast start, because that fan base just can't deal with more hard resets, really, and they might end up getting it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely buy into Norvell, and I think he's going to do a really good job. I think though they definitely need to probably set expectations closer to 8 wins as, like, a high this year, because if they start buying into some sort of, like, you know, reload, not rebuild idea, like, it could go south in a hurry. And I think Florida State, a couple of years ago, really, I know Bud Elliott's talked about this at length, where a lot of the issue for them, I think, in Taggart's first year was that they really focused in on a lot of the A guys, and UCLA did this too, and some other teams did, but, like, they missed on a lot of their A guys in 2018, and then didn't really have enough, you know, of a foothold with the, you know, option Bs and Cs to close on enough of them. So, like, disappointing class there. And really, like, you look back at the recruiting numbers of you know, the Jameis teams, and at the end of the, and at the height of the Jimbo Fisher era, was, like, that those Florida State teams were recruiting at a top 10, top 15 level. And they had a ton of NFL talent on the rosters. And, like, that's why they were so damn good. Like, it wasn't just because it was Florida State. It was because Florida State stocked with future NFL players. So, like, you know, this is going to take a little bit of time. And I think Norvell can get there. But I think he's going to have to show progress. So that means, you know, 7-8 wins this year, and, you know, 9 or 10 the following. The problem is, like, what would a Florida State fans do if he doesn't get there? I think he'll get a little bit more room than Taggart, if only because Taggart's 2018 team cratered. But I don't think he's going to get, you know, so much wiggle room that he's got more than 3 years to get them to double digits, unfortunately for him.
I think that's probably right. He definitely gets like a year free pass no matter what happens, I think. But I think even year two, he needs to at least show like real legitimate signs of progress and looking like you're heading towards where Florida State expects to be, which is tough. It's a tough situation to take over. But I think it's part of the reason why Taggart got that opportunity, and they, you know, probably didn't get there are interesting. It's interesting Taggart hadn't done a job like this earlier. And I think he and Florida State kind of met in the middle when both probably expected to get, maybe he didn't expect to get a job as big as Florida State, but there's a reason why I think they both ended up being like on each other's radar at the point they did.
Yeah, I agree. And I think too, like, you know, no offense to Taggart, who I think has done well, at various stops, but I think what happened at Florida State almost like proved why he didn't get a Florida State job before that. And like, I think he did a really nice job at Western Kentucky, but it did take some time. I think USF, he did a really nice job there eventually, but it did take some time. Like, I don't, Florida State, like I think the admins of Florida State probably should have looked over the track record and seen, like, yes, he didn't do a bad job at Oregon by any means, but like, the track record shows that it takes him some time to build something, even in a talent-rich area, like, you know, for USF, like where he had access to, you know, really great local recruits and Florida recruiting overall, and was able to, you know, without much effort, take home one of the top like 5 to 7 G5 recruiting classes every single year. Like, it still took him some time to build that. And if everyone recalls, like, if not for, you know, knocking off Syracuse when they did, like, he was potentially going to lose his job that week. I believe that was 2015 or 2016. I want to say 2015, actually, 2015, that happened. And, like, I think if you're Florida State, you see that and know it's not apples to apples, because, like, not every single coaching, you know, arc follows itself for the same guy. Like, it depends on a lot of things. But knowing that it took him a while to build at his previous stops, and knowing that Florida State is a much different animal that's not going to give you time, like, I am curious, like, what informed that decision that it was going to work out. And then when it started to not work out, that, like, the decision to not give him time to turn it around.
It was weird, especially because, like, at Oregon, even he obviously, I think he won 7 or 8 games his first year there, his only year there. But, like, obviously that's a much different situation than USF or Western Kentucky, where it did take him a little bit of time, but then he really had things rolling. But, you know, that's what you get when you take one of those jobs. It's a pretty big risk. You have to perform early, whether or not that's fair. And we'll see, because, like, even Norvell, you know, he did a really, really good job at Memphis, but he inherited a really good situation at Memphis coming off of his, I think he was OC at Arizona State before that. Fuente really did the groundwork, and I think he definitely elevated that, but he steps into a much different situation than what he's accustomed to. That'll be a fascinating one this year, knock on wood, that we have football to enjoy this year, that Florida State fans have football to freak out over this year. I'm interested in the league as a whole. I think it's in a very interesting place, especially with a lot of these teams, Syracuse among them, who do seem to be like kind of caught in the middle of stages at this point. NC State, especially, we brought up earlier, who seem to have really, you know, they stated on their like 7 or 8 wins every single year, no matter whether or not the expectations were lower or higher. And now they finally look like their expectations are set to crater. And seeing how Doran handles that, like, it wouldn't shock me. It seems like he's been trying to get out of town for like 2 or 3 years now. So it should be a very interesting season in the ACC overall.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to talk about with Doran. Doran, when we get to the NC State preview, well, again, there really isn't like an NC State preview week on the show. I think when I write the NC State like early preview, we'll talk about him a little bit and how he probably should have, like, you know, taken a plane out to Tennessee or taken up and some people up on some offers and try to sell high a little bit, because now I feel like it's going to take him a while to get back there. But in any case, one last thing we wanted to do while we're here. Everyone's doing, you know, random Twitter memes turned into articles about, like, you know, you can only pick three, you can only pick whatever. We did one last week that went over pretty well around what if for Syracuse events. When I'm doing for Tuesday or Wednesday this week is pick nine ACC teams. A lot of old school ACC fans want the conference to go back to a smaller group. That smaller group for them at least would not include us. But we're not them. They're not us. So figured, why not challenge people to pick nine teams out of the current ACC 15 to build your own slimmer all sports conference. So, you know, if you'd rather just be a big football conference, then sure, build it that way. If you'd rather be a basketball focused league, sure, build it that way. But if you'd rather do an all sports league that that excels across the board, like, I think that's where this gets a little bit more interesting, a little bit more challenging for folks. So, Dan, why don't we draft kind of three teams at a time, and kind of talk about why we picked them. And then that way, like, this isn't boring content necessarily, but we hopefully get at least some variation in here.
Okay. You might go first.
So, yeah, if you want to go first, if you feel like you got a couple teams in mind.
All right. If I'm taking three, I'm just going to get a good football foothold here. I'm doing Clemson, Notre Dame with football, and Florida State. I think, especially like Florida State and Notre Dame can hold their own in basketball as well. But I think, you know, you want the football to be the moneymaker here. Basketball will come. And obviously Syracuse, I think we're both including. You don't need to worry about depicting us. So we'll hopefully help help carry the football, the basketball side of things as well. But definitely going to keep those as a foothold.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess my first three picks, again, assuming Syracuse is already off the board for both of us. So really we only have to do, I guess, in this case, three, and then two, because again, SU is the other team. My three that I'm picking here would probably be, I'm going to go Notre Dame, Clemson, and Duke, actually. Notre Dame is a great all sports member in the ACC. They were back we were in the Big East together too. Duke actually does a really nice job across most sports, has a really successful athletic department. One of the more recognizable athletic brands, and watched by a lot of casual fans, which is critical for any fledgling conference network. They're also really good at basketball. Clemson, obviously, very good at football, decent at some other sports, more than others. Soccer in particular, they're pretty good at, and obviously one of the football powers in the country right now. So not a bad school to add, and one that could potentially eventually have some basketball upside. And if not, we get two body bag games a year, I guess.
Cool. Yeah. I think we're going to probably end up with similar lists. I'm going, for my next three, I'm going to go, Duke, UNC, and Louisville. Obviously this is a big basketball play, although Louisville and UNC to an extent, especially, you know, hopefully in the next couple of years with Howell there, building on a nice year, will bring some football eyes as well. Louisville obviously is a really nice rival for us. Probably one of our better rivalries. You know, it's probably a better rivalry, honestly, than like BC or Pitt. And we don't talk about it as much, but it's pretty natural from the Big East. Duke and UNC, obviously one of the best rivalries in sports. I know everyone's going to hate me for admitting that. It just, you know, it gets a lot of attention. So I think it's good for the league to bring both of them along. And Duke's not, you know, a terrible football school either at this point. So I think those are my next three. And then the last ones are, I think, the most interesting debates.
Yeah, for sure. On my end, I'm going Florida State, North Carolina, and Virginia. I think that, you know, North Carolina is another great all sports member. They always had the potential to be really good in football. They are usually very good in basketball, this year aside. Florida State, obviously, you're taking for the football strength to get a pretty solid three team setup on the football side with Clemson, Florida State, and Notre Dame. Competing at the top of the league every year. Florida State's also been really good in men's and women's basketball of late. So obviously credit to them. Virginia too is added because of their all sports prowess across sports that both matter and don't. I think they win like squash championships pretty regularly, as well as tennis.
If they don't actually win squash championships pretty regularly, like they do though.
They do, like in their heads, they certainly do. So obviously Virginia's pretty good at basketball. They're reasonably good at football. There's definitely things they can hang their hat on, even if they're not the best school in any of the for-profit sports. I know they're also a very good lacrosse program on both the men's and women's side. Like, again, there's plenty to like here, and you'd be hard pressed to leave the Hoos out. But now with only two slots to go, Dan, who are your picks?
Yeah, so this was really the tough one. I immediately struck out the ideas of our actual rivals, BC and Pitt. I just don't care that much about either of them. They're very boring. And then Wake Forest as well. I have some affinity towards Wake for other reasons, but they're also very boring. So I end up going Virginia and Miami. I think kind of Miami and Georgia Tech, you kind of debate between like Atlanta and the city of Miami. I think Miami just still has, whether or not it's earned at this point, like a little more cultural cachet, a little more potential. So I'm taking them. And then Virginia, I think it's just like, you know, they have a basketball championship recently. It's hard to beat that. And I'm kind of taking Virginia over Vatek, and then NC State's probably like a second team out there from the end. But I think you can kind of debate between those five, but I'm going Miami and Virginia as my two finalists.
Yeah, I think it's fair to eliminate BC and Pitt immediately. Both just trash. Both provide even, I would argue that at least one of them provides less value to this league than Syracuse does.
I think they might both.
I think both.
I think it's that crazy to say both do.
I mean, BC has like more scholarship, scholarship teams than like anybody, and they're not good at any of the sports save like men's hockey, and even that's like fallen off of late. I'm going to go with Georgia Tech and Miami. So that means I'm leaving Louisville and Virginia Tech out, most notably, in terms of like first teams out. I do feel like Virginia Tech like isn't a very good athletic department and largely coasts on like the Beamer era of the football program and Michael Vick. And if not for that, they would just be a school in the middle of nowhere. And that's not to slight them as much as it is to just say, sorry, like this is a Syracuse exercise. And, you know, I think the Hokies would beat Syracuse into this 9-team league if things were fair and just and not run by us. But since it is run by us, there's no room for the Hokies here. I think that getting Miami and Georgia Tech, they're two big brands. They're in two big cities. If Miami ever decides to get their act together again in football, that's a pretty good top four year in and year out with Clemson, Florida State, and Notre Dame. If Georgia Tech ever gets their act together again, there's another strong, like, I think this is a strong football league that has like some basketball prowess. I understand that leaving Louisville out is probably not a great idea, but I still think this basketball league can like keep it together. Don't you? I mean, I know on your side, I think it does. I think on mine, like maybe.
Yeah, I think Georgia Tech, like on paper, should be better, and I think Louisville just has a longer track record of being better, and that's why, you know, I penciled them pretty early. That being said, like who knows what happens? Louisville's definitely a little more volatile, I think, but I think they've all overall proved their worth and have probably moved on pretty effectively from those volatile eras, even though it took them a while to do so.
Agreed. And yeah, so now you end up with a group of Boston College, at least in my case, Boston College, Louisville, NC State, Pitt, Virginia Tech, and Wake Forest. They invite UConn, UMass, and like one or two other American Athletic teams and start their own league. Or the more likely scenario, the SEC grabs Virginia Tech and NC State. Wake Forest ends up somewhere. Boston College ends up
in the Patriot League.
Yeah, BC and Wake go to the Patriot League. NC State and Virginia Tech go to the SEC. Louisville ends up just kind of hanging around. They just try to restart the Metro Conference, but nobody else wants to join. And Pitt gets invited to the Big 12 for some reason.
That would be a very Big 12 move.
Like, actually, the Big 12 kicks out. Big 12 kicks out West Virginia for Pitt.
Oh God, that should be a terrible move, I think.
Yeah, that would be a terrible move. I actually think West Virginia's got a lot more like going for them.
In terms of it's like more of like just Pitt like should be better. It's just hard to get excited about them.
Yeah, I agree with that. Pitt is a. I think that's really the biggest issue with that, like, quote unquote rivalry, is that we can't get excited about that matchup in any way, shape, or form.
It's
Pitt's fault. It's not the fact that it's not like, because we're interesting. We are interesting year in and year out. Like, sometimes it's in a bad way, but like we're.
I think probably most of the time it's in a bad way, but at least it's something. We're definitely like more chaotic, and I'd rather be in college football. Chaos sells. Like,
yeah, like people find it interesting. Like, realistically, like. Pitt's just Pitt, like they just show up and you're like, oh, okay. Like, and Pitt causes some chaos, admittedly, like for elsewhere. But for some reason, like their overall like athletic brand just doesn't really like scream to me good, because they're not really good at any other sport at this point. But like football, where they're a 6 or 7 win team, and then like everywhere else, they're kind of like hanging out in mediocrity.
Yeah, it's bizarre, because like there should be plenty of like talent in that area. You're so close to Ohio, Pennsylvania has plenty of athletes. It's just outside of like occasional 8-win football seasons, especially like with how basketball's created, it's tough to really sell yourself on them.
Agreed. I can't wait to post this article so that Pitt fans lose their goddamn mind. I feel like Pitt fans like hate us like vehemently like once a year, and I feel like this week we're gonna get that day.
I mean, what else is there to do?
Exactly. Might as well rage. Dan, anything else before we go this week? So this has been a ramshackle sleigh of random ideas that are all actually related to Syracuse.
I mean, the Alan Griffin transfer was pretty big news that came like right after the 03 re-air. So we'll see what happens with him. Obviously, it's still up in the air whether or not he'll be immediately eligible based on the vote. But on paper, he's a good ad, so that could be very exciting.
Yeah, and obviously there's a lot of other great transfers out there. You know, Syracuse did not end up getting, Patrick Tate, or is it Tape?
I assume it's Tape, because it's there's an accent on the E.
Oh, there's an accent, yeah, Tape. Yeah. But yeah, after decommitting from Duke, he recommitted to Duke. So, you know, no Tape for us, but there's plenty of other players out there. I know there's some other bigger names that can seemingly keep getting added to the transfer portal. Hopefully we can grab a big man and like a really nice like shooting wing. I know Griffin could potentially be that shooting wing, but given the amount of departures, given the uncertainty about Robert Braswell sticking around, I do think that SU probably needs to make some serious additions here in a nice push to hopefully make it back to the NCAA tournament this coming season.
If we want to go get Matt Harms, who apparently we've reached out to from Purdue, the, I think he's like 7'2" center, who's a pretty good player.
Do it. Hopefully he knows Jesse Edwards.
He knows Jesse Edwards. We could have a dual windmill front court. I'd be very for this.
Yeah. Sign me up for that. Cause I think the basketball program could use a deluge of good news. So if we want to do that,
I think it's all we've ever needed.
I'm sure there is some sort of like untapped like Dutch history for Syracuse that like has largely been like unexplored to this point.
In all likelihood, there is. I mean, they had an undue influence on New York State early on, so I think it just makes all the sense.
And the Dutch have an affinity for the color orange.
This is also true. Yeah, so he, you've probably, if you've watched Purdue at all, like, you've noticed Matt Harms. He averaged, like, just under 9 points and 5 rebounds, but, you know, he only plays about 20 minutes per game. I mean, I think he'd be a really good addition, even if he's only playing 25, 30 minutes. Like, just having bodies in that front court who can effectively play and getting, if we get 40 effective minutes between our, like, 3 or 4 guys at center, I'd be very happy.
Yeah, I completely agree. Instead of trying to get one dominant guy, just go the Voltron move and just see if we can get like get one effective center out of 3 guys.
That works.
I'm about it. Well, Dan, it's been fun as always. Stay safe down in South Carolina. I hope everybody else listening stays safe as well.
Yes. Keep on doing what we're doing. It seems like, you know, the early signs are maybe this stuff is working. So that's good. Just stick at it. And, you know, we'll, let's all put on ourselves to football this fall. We know they're going to try. They're going to do everything they can to make football happen. Let's do our part and we can all say football season happened because of us.
Agreed. Agreed. That was Dan. I'm John. Thank you everybody for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Megaphone, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, Overcast, wherever else you listen to podcasts. Again, please, please rate, review, and subscribe if you can. And go orange.
Orange.